The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Hi, Patrick Cox here, and today a conversation about the gestural language of chimpanzees and what that may tell us about the origins of our own language. There's a study that came out, just a few days ago. You may have come across it. A group of researchers from the University of St. Andrews in Scotland have put together what they're calling a lexicon of chimpanzee gestures. There's 66 of these gestures, and they cover a wide range of situations and messages. Catherine Hobater led the study. She spent years studying primates in the field in Uganda, and she's going to be talking about that in this conversation with The Big Show's Carol Hills. But first, here is Hobater describing a few of the gestures.
Some of the gestures are something that would be very intuitively familiar for humans, so raising your arm in the air or reaching out your hand in front of somebody. Some of them are a little less intuitive, so presenting the back sole of your foot to somebody to ask them to climb on your back, or, you know, offering an arm to be groomed. So there's a great variety the chimps have to choose from.
What distinguishes these gestures from, say, you know, a dog wagging its tail when it wants a walk? I mean, lots of animals use signals and gestures to communicate. What makes this different?
Almost all animals use physical movements, facial expressions, calls to communicate. But what makes chimpanzee and really all great ape gestures unique is that they're what we call intentional or purposeful. And what I mean by that is that the chimpanzees actually have a goal in mind that they're gesturing to achieve, and they're gesturing to a specific other recipient. So this isn't just them broadcasting information to the world. It's always a little hard to compare it with cats and dogs because they're domesticated and we've bred them for so long to respond to our own language. But wild animals in general don't really do this kind of purposeful communication. So chimpanzee gestures are the only other system that's language-like in that kind of meaningful way.
Because as you know, there's been tons of studies on chimps and language and, you know, sometimes teaching, you know, chimps how to talk and all these things. And and a lot of them have prompted a lot of skepticism. So what's distinctive about your study is you're in the wild. You're observing them in the wild. You're not giving them any kind of reward for doing one thing or another. You're just observing.
Yeah. So these are totally wild chimps going about their natural behavior. And I really try to be as minimal a presence in their lives as possible. Of course, they have to get used to me following them around with a camera, but I don't interact with them, I don't communicate to them, we don't reward them in any kind of way. So really, they just ignore us, and that's our ultimate aim. We just want them to do what comes naturally.
And so you mentioned the mother presenting her foot to her whimpering offspring, and you're interpreting that as, you know, climb on me. So the little chimp jumps on the mother's back and they wander off together. Were you observing the same group of chimps? Were there different groups and they all seem to use the same gestures?
That's a great question. So we've just observed one group of chimps at the moment in terms of interpreting the meaning. We've looked across lots of different chimpanzee groups and lots of different ape groups in terms of which gestures are there. So we know that the gestures available seem to be shared by everybody. But what they're used for, the meanings of those gestures, we only know about one single group. And it's going to be really important to look at other groups because it might be that they use them a little bit differently. So, you know, you might have a kind of gesture dialect difference between, say, East and West Africa.
How many chimps were you observing?
The Sonso community has about 80 individuals in it. So it's that's large, relatively kind of normal for a wild chimpanzee group. It's one of the reasons it's so important to do wild work. You know, it's not looking at five or six individuals in captivity. This is looking at everybody from newborn babies to 60-year-old grandfathers.
So draw the line for us. Say, you know, we've got a Jane Goodall, one of the first researchers to observe chimps in the wild. Draw the line from her to you. What did she contribute and what's this study contributing?
Okay, so when Jane Goodall first went out to observe chimpanzees, then we really didn't recognize in any way just how unique their behavior was. And she described an amazing range, everything from tool use and hunting and inter-community fights and aggression. And she actually described quite a few of the gestures that they use. But the difference between what she was able to do as an observational record and what we've now been able to do is that we can study the gestures systematically. So what was the big breakthrough around 20 or 30 years ago, studying in captivity, was the recognition that these gestures are these purposeful, meaningful communications. And now we've been able to go back out of captivity and back to the wild to ask the questions about what does it mean by looking at hundreds and thousands of examples of these gestures.
I'm still not clear on the intentional versus non-intentional. Give me an example of a non-intentional gesture that a chimp might make and then an intentional gesture.
So what we would say is almost all the gestures are given intentionally. But I can give you an example of, say, non-intentional communication. And in the chimpanzees, for example, they give lots of different vocalizations. And in general, those don't seem to be given intentionally. It's very counterintuitive because we assume that most vocal communication is intentional because it comes so naturally to us. It's so easy when we do it, but it's actually a very cognitively complex thing to do. And the best example is if we were sitting down together and I picked up a hot cup of coffee or a hot pan in the kitchen and gave a little scream, blew on my fingers, you would know that that pan or that cup was hot. So you would have been able to interpret the information in my vocalizations. And that's quite similar to what the great apes and what most monkeys and other species actually do when they're communicating. They broadcast information, but they don't give it to a signal, a particular recipient. And with the gestures, what's much more similar to human language is it's as if I pick up that hot cup of coffee, pop it down, and then say, "Watch out, that's hot, don't touch it." You know, I'm communicating to you as a recipient with a goal in mind. I don't want you to hurt yourself by picking up the cup of coffee. And that intentional, purposeful communication is the same as what the chimpanzees are able to do with their gestures. And it really does seem to be unique to great ape gesturing and human language. It's what makes the gestures so amazing.
So all the sort of chimps pant hooting and all that stuff, that's just kind of general expressions, non-intentional communication.
Yeah, they're recently, just for the very first time, actually by using a gesture method that we'd pioneered, researchers found a single case of vocal communication by using our gestural method of looking for intentionality that is used purposefully.
What is that communication by the chimp?
That's an alarm hoo. So it's actually the one that's given when they come across a snake in the forest. They give a couple of different alarms, and one or two of them are not intentional. They seem to give them whether they're on their own or with others. But there's a single one that they give in a very directed way to other individuals.
Can you demonstrate it for us?
They give a very soft, ooh, kind of noise. Did that come across all right?
So that's the intentional versus a ooh, ooh.
That's the intentional one. So yeah, the loud, much more perhaps emotionally immediate responses that they give didn't seem to be intentional. But you can contrast the single case of evidence for an intentional vocalization against the really quite dramatic weight of evidence for all of the gestures being used intentionally all of the time. So we're starting to come together. I mean, in some ways, what's fascinating is that we don't vocalize and gesture and give our facial expressions separately as humans, and chimpanzees don't too. So really, in the end, we ought to be looking at all of this at the same time. It's a single system of communication.
So is one of the implications of this study that instead of vocalizing intentional information, the chimps are using gestures? So the similarity with humans is that they're communicating intention, but they're doing it with gestures as opposed to vocalizing?
Absolutely. Yep, that's bang on.
What does all this have to do with the origin of language?
That's a great question. And there's only so many things that we can extrapolate about information that we're gathering now when we want to talk about things that happened hundreds and thousands of years ago. But what we can do is we look for patterns of similarity and distinction. And what we can say now is that humans are certainly not the only species capable of intentionally communicating about goals. And that means that the last common ancestor that humans and chimpanzees shared, and humans and the rest of the great apes shared, likely was also capable of this kind of purposeful, intentional communication. So at least by looking at what traits are present in the modern day species, we're able to trace back over time up to what those last common ancestors might be capable of, even though their behavior doesn't fossilize.
And who was that last common ancestor?
That's a great question. And there are a lot of missing links in those trees still.
But what about other social animals that we think are pretty smart, like dolphins?
Absolutely. I think, you know, if I was ever going to look for signs of the ability to communicate intentionally outside of the primate lineage, I'd be looking at dolphins, I'd be looking at elephants. And really, to date, it's perhaps just that that work hasn't been done yet. You know, researchers have started to look at their communication, but most communication research has been done either on the signaler or on the recipient. And if you want to look at meaning, you need to look at both the signaler and the recipient together as a single system. And hopefully by starting to do that more, we might work out whether or not this really is something special to the great apes and our own lineage, or something that we share with some of the other animals.
Just a quick final question. I want to picture you out there in Uganda observing these chimps. What's the setting?
Well, I'm probably sitting under a tree looking slightly exasperated because I've been waiting for them to come down for 3 hours when they've been sitting up there in their nest. And then they'll pop down the tree and disappear off through the forest. And I have to keep up with them, tracking over trees and through swamps and trying to avoid getting too many army ant bites on the way. And then hopefully come across them when they've, you know, relaxed somewhere. They're sort of hanging out, chilling out underneath a big fruit tree, and they're feeding, and you see the little ones playing and a couple of the adults grooming. And that gives me a great opportunity to just sort of sit down quietly somewhere and film the behavior going on.
Do they know you at this point? I mean, do they sort of see you and acknowledge you?
Yes, they definitely know me as an individual. So I've worked with this particular community now for over 8 years. So especially some of the younger ones, they've just grown up with me following them. And I don't know what they think I'm doing there, whether or not I'm some kind of slightly weird, eccentric tree. I mean, they do generally just ignore me, as tempting as it is to want to be able to interact with them. I really try very hard not to. But certainly when I've been away for a couple of months, there are some very nice moments when I come back into the forest and, you know, one of the chimps that knows me quite well sort of walks past and does a bit of a double take. Oh, you know, you're back. So I know they do recognize me as an individual.
But they never stick out their leg and say, climb on my back.
Even if they did, I'm not sure I'd want to take them up on it.
Catherine Hobader of the University of St. Andrews. She's the lead author in a new study of chimps and their gestures. The study is published in Current Biology. Nice to hear Cartoon Queen Carol posing the questions. Hope she'll be back on the pod before too long. Also, nice to hear the most recent podcast from Radio Ambulante, our sister podcast in the new Soundworks Network. This episode is on a spirited attempt to bring, or to bring back, things like Mexican-American studies and ethnic studies to schools in states that don't have it right now, like Arizona, which took them out of the curriculum a while ago, and Texas. Well worth a listen. You can find it at soundworks.org, where you can also find this podcast, or just go to pri.org/language, or go to Facebook. There's a World in Words page. Last but not least, I'm on Twitter, always available there to answer your questions or hear about story ideas that you'd like us to cover in the podcast. I tweet under the name Patricox, P-A-T-R-I-C-O-X. See you next time.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. The World in Words is also supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.